You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Pan Am Flight 73 was hijacked by four terrorists from the Abu Dhabi organization. Then, after 16 hours,
ए लाडो देख तेरी ऐड आ रही है टीवी पे, इतनी आंटी लग रही है तू।
मॉडलिंग इतनी अच्छी चल रही तेरी,
ये एयर होस्टेस का जॉब छोड़ क्यों नहीं देती?
आई लाइक माय जॉब।
जेहदी,
आई मिस यू।
Good morning, captains. I'm Neeja Banod. I'm your head purser today.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome aboard Pan Am 73 to New York via Karachi and Frankfurt.
Have a safe landing.
Thank you so much.
Harish ji,
अजीब सी घबराहट हो रही थी।
लाडो का प्लेन वो कराची गया था ना,
तो वो
हाईजैक हो गया।
और नीरजा।
हेलो एवरीवन एंड वेलकम टू अनदर एपिसोड ऑफ बॉलीवुड वीकली। आई हैव विद मी दिस वीक मेकिंग दैट ट्रायम्फेंट रिटर्न ऑन द पॉडकास्ट आफ्टर अ लॉन्ग एब्सेंस, शाज एंड मनशा, लाइव फ्रॉम न्यूयॉर्क।
इट्स ग्रेट टू बी हियर, फिश, वेरी ग्रेट टू बी बैक।
फिश, यू नो हाउ हैप्पी आई एम टू बी हियर।
Somehow that sounds a lot less convincing now than when you said it to me before. But
No. She just is a little nervous, aren't you?
Very, very,
very nervous. We're all, you know, following up on some of your thrifty, high-profile performers. You know, there's a bit of pressure on, but hopefully we step up to the plate.
There's absolutely no pressure, Mansha and Shaz. You guys are both already... Okay, I don't know what just happened there. I'm definitely putting up a video bloopers reel of this podcast. It's great. Shaz and Mansha are just like sitting and fighting each other on the other side, doing God knows what. Anyway, the topic of discussion this week is Neerja. We are a week late on this podcast, so my apologies for that. The reason was that the movie was actually delayed releasing in Singapore by a week because the censors didn't give it approval initially. That is part of the reason why I drafted Shaz and Mansha in, because they were the only one of my friends who had actually seen the movie on time. But it did finally release
yesterday. Thanks for the
ringing
endorsement, Fisher. That's a nice start. but in all seriousness,
I said part, not the only.
In all seriousness, did you actually find out what the issue was that the censor board in Singapore had with the movie?
I mean, I don't know for sure, but I mean, speculating. Like, the movie was banned in Pakistan, right? Because they feel like it could be potentially not show Muslims in the best light. But, I mean, after watching the movie, I'm like, I have zero idea why Singapore had a problem with it. Even Pakistan, I'm like, the movie is not about Pakistan. Like, the fact that it's in Karachi is incidental to the story.
Exactly.
The terrorists are not from Pakistan either. So I don't know why they had an issue with it. And I mean, yeah, showing that the bureaucracy took a lot of time, like that's true in India as well. In Airlift, you see the same thing happening in India. It's true in a lot of places. So I wasn't really convinced by that.
It's harder when other people criticize you.
Yeah, but I mean, my point is there have been many other movies which have shown Pakistan in a much worse light than this. Like at the end of this movie, you don't come out thinking, oh my God, screw Pakistan. Like, you're just focused on Neerja. Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, warning for listeners, there will be spoilers on this podcast because there's no real reason to I mean, there's no real way to discuss this movie without talking about the plot and the story. So let's get right in, guys. What did you think?
I thought it was a really great movie. Charles knows this. I cried for at least 80% of the entire film. So very emotionally moving. But I think what surprised me the most was Sonam's ability to balance between being someone who wasn't dealing with an emotional role, but also not, yep. but also showing some restraint. So I think that was very refreshing for me.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I mean, on this podcast, we've given Sonam a lot of hate in the past. So at the risk of eating my own words, I have to say I was very impressed by her performance. And the thing is, a part of me was like, okay, you know what? Like, yeah, she did really well, but this role is made for her, and she like made it look so easy. But that's the thing. It's not easy at all. It's just that she made it look so easy and so effortless. Like, that's pretty amazing.
It's difficult to disambiguate whether it was her performance or she as a personality was so similar.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's part of what makes it even better, because it's one thing when it's like a Salman movie, for example, or a Shah Rukh movie, where it's also not necessarily identifiable whether it's them playing a role or them playing an exaggerated version of themselves. But that is like they're jumping around having fun, like having a good time. Whereas here, she's like having serious emotional thoughts in her head, having like dealing with intense high pressure situations. And even in those situations, you still fully believe that she is the character. And I mean, I thought that's a pretty commendable thing.
What did you think, Shaz?
I quite enjoyed the movie. I think I agree with both of you that Sonam did a great job, but I think the entire cast was terrific, and I think a lot of the credit should go to the director. I noticed, so even in the beginning when they were introducing Sonam to the story, I like what he was doing with
parallel storyline.
Exactly. Yeah. What was going on while Sonam was kind of preparing for the flight, what was going on in Karachi with this terrorist group kind of doing the same, what they were doing at that same time, and kind of showing the build up to the actual plane journey from both perspectives, which was shot well. And then a very large part of the movie was shot inside a plane, which shouldn't be discounted, you know, because you're using one set for about a good, I would say, hour of the movie, and, you know, keeping things interesting, like showing, you know, a plane can be, I would imagine, a very difficult place to shoot different people's reactions, get different perspectives. I think it was done very effortlessly, and it felt the entire time like you were in the plane with these people, which was something I think the director did really well.
Yeah, I think, I mean, so two things there. One is, I'll do the second one first. On the plane thing, like as part of my day job, I take flights every week. So one, I thought it was quite nice how they showed the other perspective, like the crew's perspective before when they're testing all the equipment, how when they're like walking in to check in, they're like joking and laughing about, you know, Sonam's first private life, basically. And I quite enjoyed that. And I thought like you said, everything that happened on the plane was completely, like, I completely believed that they were in a plane. Like, they used the space and everything perfectly. It was very realistic. And the thing about the parallel storylines that I really liked is because knowing what the story was going to be, and I know there are parts where they talk about, you know, her at home and her with her parents and stuff. So I thought, like, the first 10-15 minutes of the movie would be kind of, like, slow, where they just, like, have all this build-up, and then it starts to pick up. But because they did this parallel story where right from the start, you see what the guys in Karachi are doing and how they're planning for the thing. It creates a level of intensity and suspense right from the beginning. So you're already on edge a little bit. And that doesn't let up throughout the movie. Even when they flash back to other parts, it still maintains the whole level of suspense and intensity, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I think with non-fiction specifically, or movies based on a story, you can exercise that specific license because people know what's going to happen, so you don't really need to, like, you know, start slow and then build it up, because you don't need to build that suspense about, oh, you know, there's something that's going to happen, because everyone knows it's a terrorist attack,
right?
So you can start that from the get-go. So I think that creative license is there, which is why I think it's a good thing, but it's also very hard to still maintain suspense even though you're giving the story away. That makes sense.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a good point.
Like you said, also, all the other supporting actors I thought were really good, especially both her parents. Shabana Azmi, of course, has already gotten a lot of praise, and her monologue at the end, especially, is quite moving. But I thought even the dad and the scenes when they're on the phone with each other, where the dad is at the office and she's at home, where he's kind of like, he's trying to console her, but he can't even console himself. And he's just like blabbering and like has no idea what to say. I found that so kind of very human, very believable.
Very human. Also the parts where she's talking to the kid and her entire reaction to the news, which is kind of disbelieving and just wishing positively and just not seeing a single negative thing. And I think at one point, one of her sons says, if she comes back or something, and she just completely freaks out on him and says, what do you mean if? Like, she's definitely coming back. And that's something that's very, I don't know, I've kind of seen that in people where they just don't want to even think about the negative event happening because they feel like they have some influence over it, even though they're so far away. And that was again reflected by, you know, that whole ring incident where she leaves her ring at home, and that's kind of whatever, foreshadowing again. We know what's going to happen, but it's well shown in that way that her mother kind of holds on to that ring and you know, thinks that she can still have some sort of impact.
Yeah, I think that phone scene specifically, it sort of reminds you of how, I don't know, for me it was very relatable to, you know, certain, like my parents, you know, whenever, you know, they're worried, they don't try to project that on me. And just like, I think that relatability is there. So I think everyone feels that when they're seeing that phone screen. Of course, we've not dealt with what they've dealt with.
Yeah.
But there is that certain level of relatability, which makes you more emotional, even though the emotion isn't explicitly shown on screen.
For sure, because you are actually looking at what the parents are going through and you're seeing their reaction. You know they're bottling it up within them. So. Yeah, it's well shown again, and the whole like family scene in the beginning seems very, I don't know, it you could see how her this probably is obvious, but you can see how her character is so is the way she is by looking at her parents and the way they interact with her and the way they kind of treat her.
Yeah.
You can see why she's so positive and how she's so brave and how they treat her with so much, you know, like, give her so much responsibility. I think she's like the star of the family. You can kind of see that in the way she takes responsibility when she's on that plane and the way she cares for other people.
Yeah. One thing I actually found very interesting was how, despite showing how amazing her parents were, there were these slight elements of grey in terms of how they were trying to convince her to adjust to her husband. I mean, eventually, of course, they realize what he did to her.
Sure.
But I just like the fact that they kind of, this movie touched on a few themes that are probably prevalent amongst many households. And I think that was just interesting because, of course, it focused on feminism and it also focused on like the importance of the girl child and just the inherent sexism in a lot of families. But I thought that was a good sort of undertone to play out.
How do you think it focused on the inherent sexism?
I think just in general, for the whole focus about how they were telling her, you know, women are always the ones who have to adjust.
Right, the mom
that,
does say.
Yeah, she does.
So the mom says that, but you can see that the dad is always kind of treating her as, quote unquote, the main child or like the, you know, like.
Of course, but in certain situations, the dad doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
He doesn't like oppose it when her mom says that, right?
Yeah,
which is a certain signal in itself.
Yeah, it was shown in the most liberal way, in the sense where, yes, there is this concept of marriage in India, which is like you have to kind of stick through it, and yes, people will make demands of you, and like you know, it gets tough, but you have to kind of fight through it, as opposed to in some cultures where you're more, you know, like someone, if you're not happy, someone is not treating you well. Like, there is that, obviously, that Indian thing shown with that part of our culture. But yeah, they were also progressive enough to acknowledge the fact that something was completely not right. And in that situation, it's okay to you know, end the marriage.
Yeah. No, I mean, I quite in, like the fact that in a movie like this, it would be very easy to just, and what, which is more or less what I expected actually, to just have it very focused on the actual hijacking and what happens on the plane. But they managed to bring out these social issues and themes. And I think, I mean, more than, I wouldn't call it sexism, but more kind of the perceived role of women in society. Because even though the parents themselves are very progressive and they're happy to let Sonam do whatever she's doing and modeling and be independent pretty much, they still feel like once she gets into the quote unquote societal norms of getting married, etc., she needs to fill those roles. Until they finally realize that, you know, the way she's being treated is completely not right. So I quite liked the way they show that without still, it added a different dimension to the movie.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, without that, they wouldn't have fully captured her story because she wasn't just an air hostess, right? Or a flight attendant, whatever. She was also a model and a successful one, it seemed. She loved her job because it allowed her to do different things. And I think in that era, being a flight attendant was also seen as extremely glamorous, except especially for like an international airline like Pan Am.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, I agree with all of that. But what I liked about it is, and I think, Mansha, you touched on it earlier, but it's done in a way that's not very in your face, which I think sometimes a lot of Bollywood movies make the mistake of doing. Like, for example, we'll talk about the trailers and stuff later, but in Ki and Ka, right? The trailer, the movie, which is about like gender reversal, it's just so blatantly in your face and like not tasteful at all. Whereas here it's done in a much more kind of, you see it for yourself and you feel these emotions and realizations by yourself. It's not kind of plastered on the screen like, here, look at this. This is what needs to be done or this is what is happening.
Yeah, I agree with that. It was very organic.
Let's talk about the actual hijacking parts itself. What were you guys' views on how realistic or tense or whatever else it seemed?
It's tough for us to say, really, because it was a completely different era, right? So this was like 30 years ago now. It seemed at first to me very strange that someone could just drive up to a plane and get in, you know, but it really didn't seem like there was that much security guarding the gate and like how they actually got into the airport. But I mean, I would imagine that at that time, such incidents weren't as common and therefore they weren't as rigid security measures, and you could actually do that. And you actually saw, you know, in some flights in India, you still have to kind of drive in that little bus and go up to the plane, and you know, like you get on. And you actually saw that. So
Shaz was so happy during that scene.
It brought back so many memories. Like, not having the whatever the thing is called.
I mean that still happens in India, Shaz. So if you want to make more memories, you can always take more flights.
Yeah, for sure, but. It's strange because it seemed like a mass exodus of people, because usually like in India in such a flight there's like 200 people or something like that. Here there was like 800, or no, actually there was still like 350 people, but the thing on the screen seemed like it was a ridiculous number of people suddenly getting off buses and all climbing the train and the plane at the same time. And also at this time they used to have the thing where if you were in a connecting flight you just got off and like other people got on
and you stayed.
You stay in your seat and you're just like,
it's like you're going on a bus stop.
So yeah, you couldn't, I guess duty free in Karachi wouldn't have been as appealing back then.
Yeah, one of the other things which we were discussing before we started recording is kind of the factual accuracy of it. So I know, so there was a lot of attention on social media, at least on a couple of the air hostesses who were actually on the flight, made some comments on Facebook and other platforms saying like, this is like completely fictional glorified account, which just puts false adulation on Nirja and doesn't adequately reflect the role that the rest of the crew and everyone else played. My view on that is, one, I thought the rest of the crew was also given their fair share in terms of how they help and what they do. And two, the movie is, well, I mean, one, the name of the movie is Nirja. It's about Nirja. So it's obviously going to show her perspective and her life. And two, I mean, I thought it was just quite distasteful, because it's like the movies, why would you want to make something like this about your life and your whatever, right? That's not the point. as such.
Your life being in this case, New
York. Being in this case, the air hostess, the other air hostesses.
Oh, okay. Yeah, as in them wanting attention and taking it away from New York. Okay.
So they were essentially, like, a lot of them were like, no, we didn't do anything, but these specific people should be given credit for. Like, a lot of them were, they were like, no, it's not, we're not saying we should be credited, but there were these three people that they, like, hashtagged on Twitter.
Got it.
They said these three people should be given due credit for their help on the flight.
Sure. I mean, I guess, like, yeah, it's unfortunate that somebody who did a great job and I guess get recognized in the movie, but I think from what I've read, the director did a lot of research in trying to make this factually correct, because there obviously are so many surviving members, the majority of the people survived from that flight. So there are a lot of real accounts of what happened that day. And I was actually reading this article about two of the people that were on the flight, and, you know, they seem to, this the kind of points that they mentioned seem to be accurate with
the passengers, right?
Yeah, with the movie, as in the sense that how they recall her, like, being calm and just helpful throughout the flight and doing her job, doing her duty, and actually, the whole incident about the plane's lights going off, the terrorists suddenly opening fire because they thought that, you know, that special forces were going to invade. And Nija actually specifically being the person who tipped off the cockpit to actually, you know, which resulted in them ejecting themselves. And I think that's the part where you can actually say, okay, she saved a lot of lives, because if that plane had taken off, then, you know, God knows what. Okay? So that's one specific incident where you can say she saved a bunch of lives. And the rest, I'm sure a lot of people helped, and like a lot of people were, you know, and nothing away from them. Regarding something that was apparently factually inaccurate was the scene in the end about how she actually is killed. You know, it did seem a little...
Yeah, but that is expected. I mean,
sure.
For a movie made for mass audiences, there's always going to be a bit of creative license. Like, you know, the fact that she dies protecting... Sorry, spoilers, everyone. But the fact that she dies protecting, like, three little kids and makes sure they get out of the plane is, like, probably not how it happened, right?
Yes, yes. And specifically, these people just say that she was guiding people off the plane, and the main guy kind of held her by the ponytail and shot her in the head. And that's how it happened. And then it's really, you know, in that case, up to the director as to how factually accurate he wants to make it, how much of an artificial tearjerker he wants to make it. And yeah, either way, it's really up to him. And I feel like a lot of the stuff he did seem to be not using his creative license, like, unjustifiably.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, I think where most of the emotion comes out actually in the scenes where they're flashing back. So, like for example, that the one scene where she's in the bathroom and the terrorist is knocking on her door. And then it cross-references that with, 2 years ago, before the hijacking, where she's with her ex-husband and he's knocking on her door and she's inside crying. Like, I thought that's where the creative license came in, where he used these techniques to, you know, parallel these situations to other situations in her life, show what she's thinking, and really bring that out more, rather than make the actual events exaggerated or more kind of tailored to drawing emotion.
Yeah, for sure. I think, and there you never actually know what she's thinking, right? So maybe you can use your creative license more over there. I guess there.
Yeah.
Sure.
No, I agree with what both of you have said.
Good to know.
I don't always agree with you, Shaz.
I just noticed that in the past couple of days. Yeah.
Or like in general.
About this movie. There's been a lot of disagreement.
When have we disagreed about this movie?
I thought we should only shed two tears, and you thought you should shed like a whole bucket.
I can't help how much I cry. Shaz is like wiping away his tears and like not and trying to make it seem as if he was just like, you know, just like scratching his eyes, and it was just too funny.
Yeah, that's more or less what I was doing as well.
And like, I'm in the corner bawling and bawling my eyes out.
But this, but it was really not funny, but it was really interesting how, you know, normally when the movie ends, the lights come on, people start getting up, right? Over here, everyone in the whole theater was just like in their seats still for like 2 minutes, like basically gathering themselves and making them like no one made eye contact with anyone. Everyone was just like, all right, calm down, breathe, like wipe away all the tears or whatever. And then 2 minutes later, like everyone got up.
Yeah, we had an applause in our theater, right?
Yeah, and everyone was looking out for that factual information at the end about like what actually, something they mentioned about how many people escaped and all of that.
Right.
And they showed pictures of her, which was nice.
I mean, yeah, I mean, after all that, like once the credits, once the pictures start coming, basically, when the credits start rolling, even after that, everyone was just waiting for like a good 2-3 minutes before people started walking out.
Singaporeans are a lot more patient than New Yorkers, I'll tell you
I mean, you realize the audience is all Indian, first of all.
Yeah, we had like a lot of Asians. Remember the Asians that were sitting
there? Yeah, the one you offended, right?
I did not offend her. That's not true. Please can you remove that from the pod? I do not offend her.
Yeah.
Why? What did you do?
I feel like Pukki has a large Singaporean audience.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, she was just, she thought she was a flight attendant, so she was telling people where to move around in their seats and stuff. So.
I didn't know that.
She was truly inspired by it, so
I'm just trying to get our seats together.
Yeah, that's nice. Quite
generous. Very, very. Oh, yeah, it's not assigned seating. I totally forgot about that.
But New York, we don't get the luxuries of assigned seating. And because of me, we got there early enough and got a seat. If it wasn't for me, Shaz would have been eating popcorn and sitting in the front row. Because he wanted popcorn.
Closer to the pilots.
God, so bad.
Yeah. Going back to the movie, I also found it quite interesting that the...
That's not discussing our theater experience, and I can talk about what we're here for.
Are we ready? If we must. Good? If we must. I found it quite interesting that about how the pilots escaped. I didn't actually know that was possible.
Yeah, that was amazing.
That the cockpit really opens from the top. Yeah, because I read, also, I mean, before going into the movie, I generally knew the plot, but I didn't know that the whole thing happens actually while the plane is grounded.
Yeah,
I thought it happens on the air and they make it. So I was like, and then I think I read one of the reviews before I went, which mentioned this thing about how, you know, the pilots leave their post. And I'm like, how is that? Like, one, how is that possible? And like, two, so who was flying this plane? Like, it didn't strike me that the whole thing happens on the ground.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting.
And it was also, at first when they left, I was like, wow, they're cowards, you know? But then I realized it was actually the right thing to do, which was interesting.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, this is obvious enough, but Shabana Azmi's monologue was obviously very, very good at the end. Specifically because I think she touched on how, you know, everyone's giving her all this praise and saying that you should be proud that you have this daughter. But she has to, she almost reminds people that this is not the best situation for me, you know. And I think it was very moving, that specific speech. I don't think I ever got bored, even though it was like, what, 20 minutes long?
Was it?
I don't know. I felt it was really long.
No, it was only a couple of minutes, I think. Three or four minutes. The whole movie itself is only 2 hours, which I really liked. It was very, like, fast-paced, tight, compact.
Yeah, right? That was one of my favorite parts.
Shaz, of course, has very strong views about running time of movies.
Yeah, I know.
As we remember from the last time.
No, did you miss anything? No, everything was there. Everything was fine. This movie could have easily dragged on longer with, like, more pointless exchanges within the plane.
I mean, yeah, if it was for this movie, but every movie is different. You can't cut Bajirao Mastani, for example.
I will not speak.
I have views on that. But anyway.
He's mad with views.
Anyway. But one not downside necessarily, but one thing that was a bit weird or difficult for me to at least get my head around with the tight timeline of the movie is that it makes the actual story timeline seem a bit like stretched, right? Because 20 minutes in real time watching it when they're in the, after they're in the plane, or 40 minutes maybe, they've been in the plane for 8 hours, which doesn't come across at all.
Yeah.
Which I think at one point, you know, cause they're asking they're negotiating with the airport authorities to get a pilot, and they keep saying 30 minutes, yeah. 30 minutes. And then suddenly the next scene is like, it's been 8 hours, what do we do? And I'm like, oh, that did not register.
No, that's a very good point. I remember thinking, briefly, that it had been very, it seems like they have, it said 8 or 10 hours, and I noted that only one kid had mentioned that he wanted to use the restroom, which was surprising because...
Shaz has had other experiences as a child.
No, also, like... You're more free, I would think, that you would want to use the restroom more.
Did that also make you nostalgic, Shaz? Kids wanting to use the restroom, just like the buses.
Shaz went on a whole new journey of nostalgia on this, for this movie.
That's a strange thing to say. isn't it somewhat weird that, because I'm only mentioning this because the guy had such a big issue with that one kid using a bathroom one time. So like, if in a whole plane of passengers, people want to use the restroom like all the time, like there's always a line like right outside, but maybe that fear is overcome.
But Chaz, I mean, yeah, I think, but people are like scared, right? So they'd rather like figure out a way to hold it in unless they really can't, which for kids is probably more likely the case. And I mean, I didn't think that was such a big... I basically didn't spend enough time thinking about the chronological timeline of when, the distribution of when people would want to go to the
bathroom. Yeah, it's not something you necessarily should think about. It's just this, something that came to mind.
Anyway. Any other thoughts about the movie?
I just wanted to mention about the director since I thought he was phenomenal. So I kind of did a research on this guy.
Shaz is very proud that he did research and notes. It's the most preparation anyone has ever done for this podcast, including myself. So Shaz, please tell us what you found.
It's just like, I really like the way he... I thought he was a very good director in many ways. One you mentioned with the parallel storylines.
Can we, as part of this monologue, can we also name the director to give him enough credit?
His name is Ram Madhvani. I'm sure he'll be extremely happy with this publicity I'm providing.
Is he Sindhi?
I don't know.
That is, of course, Mansha's first reaction.
So I was just trying to look for his filmography to see what else he had done, because I was just curious. And apparently the only other directorial... He's made two other movies. As director, there's this movie that he made in 2002. It's called Let's Talk. And it actually starred a pre-Mehuna Boman Irani, which is interesting. Yeah.
Oh.
And it seems like an indie film. It's about like this married couple. And it from the brief summary I read, it seems like a very artsy movie. Anyway, and since then, he didn't make a movie apart from one documentary on Amitabh Bachchan called Everlasting Light, which was shown in New York. This is his first movie apart from that, which was very surprising to me. And hopefully, given the success of this movie, he gets more of the studios are actually looking at him. And I think it'd be a great thing for Bollywood if you know, he made more movies.
Yeah. There's another thing. Sorry, Shaz. I will let you get back to your research, but that just got a raise the idea in my head that not an idea, but a thought. There's been a recent trend now of a lot of movies being made based on real life events. So you had Talwar, you had Airlift as well. One or two others which are escaping my mind right now. And now this one. And they've all been very well received and done pretty well, even box office wise. So which I think is a positive trend, right? I at least for me personally, I enjoy seeing movies that are a bit more realistic, even if they're not based on an actual real life incident, that are more realistic and more kind of believable. You can relate to bit more.
I completely agree with that. And I think one of the things that makes it that way is that we have the talent in terms of directors and actors, where we just get a bit wild with our scripts because that's what we think that people really want. But, you know, there are...
They are writers enough.
Okay. We'd love to hear more about that. Actually, I know nothing about that, but...
sarcastic.
No, I'm serious. I'm actually serious. But yeah, when something's a tight script that is still going to draw people because it's based on a real event, meaning something that's been in the press and people have heard about, or it's the case of a hero... In this instance, and in the instance of Airlift, you're going to get the crowd because people are just curious as to how actual events that they've heard about are reflected in these movies, and it makes it much tighter. It reduces your need to have these music videos and item songs and all of that. So I think what Airlift and Talwar and this movie have shown us is that there is an alternative way to attract audiences, which is by showing real-life events that they've heard of in the media or stories about heroes. It kind of reduces your need to have these larger-than-life stars doing their idiosyncratic things, because the actual star in the movie is the real-life person. And they're doing things that are impressive enough on their own that the actor is actually doing their job by just mimicking them, which is what an actor, in my opinion, should do, as opposed to just being...
And I think it's also partly to do with the fact, so if you guys haven't already, you should listen to the AIB podcast from the Mami Festival in Bombay. And they basically talk about writing and the standards in terms of what audiences want and expect are very different. So there's one thing which you mentioned, I think, in terms of socially, there's the perception of heroism is kind of now broader. It doesn't have to be someone going out, saving the world, beating up people, doing stuff. It can be someone like Deepika Padukone's role in Piku, just doing normal things, handling her life, handling her family, taking care of her father. That's also seen as kind of heroic in a way, right? In a more human way. That's one thing. The other thing also is just in terms of, you know, so on that podcast, the guests were David Dhawan and Juhi Chaturvedi, who is the writer of Piku and Vicky Donner. And it was amazing to see the contrast in their approach, right? So David Dhawan was like, oh yeah, like, you know, we had a script, but it was very fluid. Like, we would improvise, we would change things. Like, Govinda would come say some stuff. Sanjay Dutt would come do some random stuff, add his own twist, add different things. Salman would come and do this. And Juhi Chaturvedi is like, no, like, before we start shooting, the first thing we do is we make sure we have a really tight script. We rehearse and re-rehearse with, like, all the actors. And only then, when we get that completely kind of, where there's no room for improvisation, everyone knows exactly what they're supposed to do and the vision of what it's supposed to be. And then you make the movie, right? And the thing is, I think that level of professionalism, because I don't want to say the other guys aren't professional, but the level of kind of attention to detail is because if you look at, you know, movies in the 90s, it was very much like, oh, this whatever is this fantasy world that, you know, and David Dhawan actually said this, right? Now people want to see something and believe that it's real and that they can see it in life. Whereas when we made movies, we made it like so that we say it's real, therefore it's real. And people just readily bought into that. So that is another very interesting trend, which is also contributing to this whole people moving towards more realistic situations being shown in movies.
Yeah, I think even Zoya and Reema Tyagi, they do the same thing. Like, they don't touch the script. After they've locked it down. Like, they don't do any of this improvising. They, like, rewrite until it's super tight. And very rarely will they differ from the, you know, what they decided. Because they've done so much, they've put in so much thought into each line, each scene.
And even, I mean, they might decide, like, okay, we're going to improvise this, but even then it's a calculated move. Like, for example, the Ranveer and Anushka song, like the choreography, I know it's not the script, but they let them kind of do it by themselves and have their own chemistry.
They don't like the moves they do, but exactly.
Even in, like, I mean, in Hollywood, it's also, like, very common to have, like, Shaz, you'll, I'm sure, remember Jack Leshner, who was our film professor at NYU, telling us during Blue Valentine, where he made Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams improvise an entire scene and just told each of them separately what their characters were, and that's what the scene is in the movie.
And it's funny, sorry, going back to what Masha just said about you don't have to tell them what their dance moves are specifically. If we look at any of the movies for like Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham, but everyone's doing the same. But that adds to the whole thing where if you watch one of these dance songs, you just assume all of them know the moves. But if you watch a song like the one you just mentioned with Ranveer and Anushka, then it's plausible that somebody would, you know, could just come up, two people could just come up with that and have some great chemistry. It's just way more realistic, which is, I think, what we're moving towards, what we're all saying. But
I mean, there is still an audience, right, for the mass stuff. But even that is now, I think, being held to a higher standard. Like, you have to be kind of really good and have a really charismatic presence like a Salman and whatever to pull that off. Like even Ajay Devgan, for example, his last few attempts at doing that, like Singham Returns and Action Jackson, were complete flops. Because audiences, like, I'm only going to buy this if you have a presence like a Salman or a Shah Rukh.
And even that, I mean, they're getting older and it's going away a little bit. I think one of the key guys who's kind of led this charge towards more technical filmmaking, it, like, apart from the directors, which I guess I don't know as much about, is Irfan Khan, which he's just a fantastic actor, right? And everyone sees that. But he's also a guy that I think everyone can relate to, like in terms of like the way he speaks in a lot of these movies where he's just very no nonsense. He just like says things that he doesn't. He's not like the most eloquent guy in the world because he's not trying to be. And I think if people who go to watch Salman Khan and Shah Rukh Khan movies, like they can still relate to and watch these like relatively simplistic scripts. They can relate to Irfan Khan as a character, and he's a great actor. So I think he's a good like bridge between.
No, I mean Irfan Khan definitely. I think the other group of people is just in general a lot of the kind of current younger generation of actors are much more willing to experiment and do different types of roles than these guys were in the 90s. Like even especially amongst the actresses, like in the last 2 years, I think we've had. Piku, NH10, Queen, right? Where
and then Masan.
Masan, yeah, but I'm saying even just the mainstream ones, like you've had Piku, Piku, Queen, and NH10, where you have all these. Sorry.
The boxing movie, right?
Mary Kom is a bit different. I'll explain why. But I mean, but in all of these three movies, you have female. Leads who are very attractive and glamorous and have done modeling before and done everything, but playing very normal human relatable roles, right? Like they actually use the actors for their talent and their personality as opposed to just making them look good, right? And I think even amongst with the guys, I think it's been a bit less, but even then guys like Varun Dhawan and Siddharth Malhotra have tried to do more unconventional roles like Badlapur and Ek Villain, even though they are still doing the Dilwales and the other stuff. So I think generally there's a much more flexibility and, I mean, I'm generalizing here, not doesn't apply to everyone, but there's a lot more willingness to try different things.
It's also a reflection of the audience. The audience is also open to it, a bit more open probably now than before.
Sure, do we have a little time to hear about Monsha's point about screenwriters not getting paid enough? I'm very interested in that. I think the audience might be as well.
Yes.
No, I think I was just basically talking about how, and this what I'm saying is not a novel point. So something that's often stated in the industry time and time again.
That was the disclaimer.
But so this is not my original idea, but essentially because our writers are not paid as much as the other parts of the other people who are part of the movie. We don't have people who are incentivized enough to be great writers. And so oftentimes you have a situation where only a few people are writers and you have just a few people who are giving these really tight scripts, and only if you've really been successful or you have enough of a backing from, you know, a certain production house can you really go ahead with it. So I think that's another thing that our industry, I know, is complains about.
Fraternity.
Our fraternity. Like, no, we're all
I think it's a bit of a chicken and egg problem, right? Because I think earlier, because of the reasons we just talked about, earlier the script was just not given importance. So directors didn't care.
Yeah, exactly.
The writer was just like, oh, someone like just take this whole big idea and put it into like a 50-page document, as opposed to you need to, like, the writing being seen as a crucial element of the thing.
Except for like one instance where like Salim Javed were like the writing duo, and they were very so that's interesting, right? Because they were so important, but they still weren't like paid as much. Like they were given due credit, and you know everyone knew a Salim Javed film, but it wasn't like they, you know, they had the most credit going to them in terms of like compensation.
Yeah, But I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, the thing is also now, right, writers, good writers who have ideas now have much more platform to actually share these ideas. Like they can go write a web series for a TVF or an AIB, or they can make their own like indie movie and like distribute it through online or do other stuff. So
yeah.
I think it's plausible that now when people start realizing the importance of writers, that should hopefully change.
True.
Yeah, wait, did Abbas Mostan write the movies they directed?
I sincerely hope not. And I don't think so.
But you have not.
I'm sure they did, of course. Who can come up with like 5 lists within 1 hour?
Yeah.
The other,
except for them. They essentially, race 1 was the same thing as race 2, you know?
Yes, we all know so.
It's like unbelievable.
The other very interesting thing, right? I was noticing, I was looking at the awards and stuff. We are one of the few industries, I think, that has a separate award for screenplay and a separate award for dialogue. Which is like very strange because they should be part of the same thing, right?
Maybe is the one for dialogue like best dialogue? Like,
yeah, it is dialogue.
Best dialogue, yeah. Right? So that's like Salman Khan saying, "Main ek baar jo."
No, not a single sentence.
I mean,
like all the dialogue.
Not.
No, no, like best, most catchy dialogue of the year.
Inventing
like,
we can go back new category.
Pretty much pick plus one for every.
Yeah. No. Like film with the best dialogue as a whole.
Like, then what's the screenplay? Yeah, I get you. Point 8.
Because earlier, like, dialogue used to just be kind of improvised and done whatever, right? Like, whereas the actual story and this thing. Screenplay is more, I guess, I'm also speculating here, but screenplay is more about the storyline progressing.
And how it's
the
shown, right?
Vision and the how it's shown, like,
how the camera work is done is what the screenplay is about. But, I think that's what's separating. It's the direction versus the dialogue.
Yeah, but I just found that interesting because I think it's hard to.
I think we spoke about smoking up. Are we talking about trailers?
Much is getting a little frustrated on this.
I'm not getting frustrated.
Back in the 1016.
Okay. Trailers. Mansha, you have views on trailers.
Sure. So should we talk about Ki and Ka?
And it seems like a pretty clear storyline. I think that talking about length of or runtime of movie, I think that runtime of that trailer was a bit excessive.
Yeah,
this has been happening on all trailers we discussed a couple of weeks ago. Like, every trailer is now like 3 minutes long.
Yeah, and it sucks when you're watching a trailer of a comedy movie unrelated, but often the best scenes are all in the trailer, and you go to the movie and you're just like not laughing at all.
Yeah, Shandar is like case in point. Literally, the movie felt like they just basically took the certain snapshots of the trailer and put rubbish in the middle and then packaged the movie, because the trailer was the best part of the movie.
That does seem like more of an efficient approach.
So what did you think, Shaz, of the trailer?
I thought it was an interesting concept to explore, but just it's kind of almost like Dostana of sorts, you know, like it's so clear in your face that what they're trying to show you. But it still could be, you know, funny, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. Some parts of it irritated me a lot. Specifically, like, it's one thing to discuss role reversal and, you know, how society can be more progressive by, you know, roles being reversed from how it's typically viewed in India. But it's another thing to have this girl put a Mangal Sutra on the guy.
Yeah.
That's like
thing.
Another like level of like weirdness altogether.
Yeah, no, like, sure. Yeah, I completely get it, where we just kind of make things, we just take them to a whole new level when we don't need to. Like, that whole point Pitch was making earlier about, you know, everything in the Nirja being very subtly done, where they're evoking the kind of response they want, but they're not like abusing your eyes with it.
Yeah, but this is not even like about subtlety as much as it's about it's losing the point completely.
Are you offended by the whole Mangal Sutra thing? Kind of. Okay, got it.
I want to wear Mangal Sutra.
I mean, you can wear it. You don't have to be.
I know,
but you want to.
I know, Shaz. Let's not discuss that. But what I'm trying to say is that like it just dilutes the point by like focusing on, you know, these like peripheral like symbols associated with like being a wife.
But do you think they're actually trying to make a point?
I mean, the fact that they're trying to explore pure role reversal in itself and trying to show how, like, just trying to show some sort of progressive nature of society, I mean, implies that they're trying to make some sort of point.
I think they're just using this for its comedic purposes. By watching the trailer, it purely looks like
that's true. They
I'm just going to do exactly the opposite of what you think is, like, seen, I guess.
Maybe for me, it was like, this would be a great opportunity to show something, you know, interesting, and they've, like, relegated it to, like, some sort of comedic.
Yeah. Well, good news for you is that
I think that movie
is still to be made.
No, but I think I'm slightly leaning towards Shaz's point of view in that I think they are trying to make a point, but they're trying to make it in that they're making it so exaggerated that, like, it's like people, like, they're using exaggeration to make that point, to say, like, this is how ridiculous things are, and this is how, you know. And my issue with it, though, is that it's a very fine line, because you do risk, if you don't do it in the right way, offending certain people, such as Mansha in this case. Yeah, exactly. I'm not singling you out, Mansha, but I'm saying it has to be done in a, even like, okay, even Dostana, right? Like, Dostana is also like a very exaggerated thing, but okay, maybe then also think the environment is a bit different. I wonder if Dostana, if it released now, would probably offend a few people in terms of how they portray Abhishek Bachchan's portrayal of a gay character. So I think now, like, it's much more of a sensitive issue now, so they have less leeway to play with. That said, I mean, the director is R. Balki, who made Pa. And so I think in the movie itself, it's also the opposite could also be true, right? Where they made the trailer seem very wacky and in your face to get people in, but the movie actually takes a much more nuanced stance, is also a possibility, and what I'm hoping for, to be honest. But we'll find out. Can't make up my mind about this.
Basically. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just like, I think I've started getting irritated with Karina, which is sad.
I also find this whole pairing a little weird.
I think they needed to find someone, like, overpowering for Arjun, who looks kind of like, I can't explain it, but, you know.
But, like, I thought Anushka would be a good distinct.
Like, feel like if they had, like, a Jadeepkar, you know, it would just be, I think Karina obviously has a certain presence, but I think there's something about, like, I think Arjun's personality, Austin's personality, character, and the fact that he's newer, that kind of made it. I felt like maybe that's why they thought the pairing would work.
Yeah, that she's automatically almost the woman in charge. She's
been
around longer, maybe the biggest star, you know, like that sort of thing.
Oh, I see. Okay, maybe, yeah. No other trailers as such have released, but Mansha, you had views on Kapoor and Sons.
Nothing specific. I think it was, like, cute. I liked Rishi a lot in his role, and I mean, it's a very good looking star cast. You have Alia, you have Fawad, you have Siddharth.
I also liked the fact that it's more. Or it seems, at least, more serious and emotional than I would have thought from my expectations before the trailer. Whereas, in fact, my expectations were a bit flipped. I expected Ki and Ka to be a bit more serious, and this one to be more all out, like, ridiculous, funny. But it ended up being the opposite.
Yeah, I thought it was cute. I liked the pairing.
What are your views on Shah Rukh Khan's latest song in Fans?
Oh god, okay. So it keeps coming on my Sawan playlist, so I'm irritated with it. So maybe I'm biased.
Okay, that's the song, but what about Shah Rukh's
performance? I think it's interesting. I just can't get over how he looks. I don't know. Even though I try, forget that this is Shah Rukh.
You know, interestingly, I think this version of him is closer to what he looked like in the 90s, like in Bazigar and stuff, with this, like, long hair coming up to his, like, forehead, and generally, like, not necessarily super polished or super whatever.
That's what he's going for now, right? Like, this fan is 20
years. Yeah, No, but the actual look itself of a younger Shah Rukh, like, I mean, honestly, if you look at Shah Rukh in the 90s versus Shah Rukh now, like, they, I mean, I wouldn't say they look like different people, but like, if you told me that those are actually two brothers and not the same person, I would believe it, as opposed to him being the same person. Because it's not just about the fact that he's aged. I think he just looks fundamentally different now than, or at least in the early to mid 2000s, then, you know. Like that scene in the song where he's standing on that post, standing next to that poster of Shah Rukh, right? Like, they, I could believe that those are two different people who look very similar, as opposed to the same person.
Do you happen to know how this movie is being received in India? Like, when I watched the trailer, it seemed very, like, self-propagating and just ridiculous, like, as if he's lost his mind and he's just, like, misses being the biggest star and he's coming out with a movie about someone being his fan and it's him. And it just seems like an entirely new way of like.
I don't agree with that. I mean, I think it's an interesting concept, right? Because if they, I mean, it depends on how the movie turns out in the end. Because it's an interesting concept, because generally when people reach the level of like stardom that like a Shah Rukh or Salman do, everyone just sits and talks and makes judgment about them. But you don't necessarily see it. There are two things. One, you don't necessarily see it from their perspective. Two, there are also people who reach a level of fanaticism where for, at least for people like me or for people like us, you just wonder, like, you know, like, why? Like, how, I mean, I understand that he's great and he's awesome, but, like, how can you reach this level of intensity? And, I mean, about actors, about cricketers, about sports people, whoever. So, and it reminds me actually a lot of the song Stan by Eminem and that video where it's, like, an obsessive fan chasing him. And based on fans' Wikipedia page, this is supposed to be a kind of psychological thriller type movie. And also, you know, Shah Rukh did an interview a few weeks or months ago where they were asking about Rais and how, like, oh, you know, after a long time you're doing a not commercial movie and not, you know, your usual stuff. And his response was actually like, you know what, it's a different topic, but Rais is actually much more commercial than Fan. Fan is much more unconventional and much more different. So I'm quite curious to see what it will be like. Reception in India, I think the general reception is like anything Shah Rukh does, people are excited. I think specifically also about this role and his portrayal. Like, I, you know, I think I've already heard people say, like, you know, he's nailed on to win Best Actor for playing a role.
I just think that I would have found it more, I would have not had the thought I had if it was a different actor playing the Fan. You know what I mean? You know, like, it just seems very, I don't know.
And Shazu just, like, Shazu, we were watching the trailer before Neerja, and he's like, yeah, so he just made it on himself.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
That's literally what I thought. Like, let me make this guy a fan. I'm going to play the Fan, and it's about, he's a fan of me. And, like, alright.
Well, let's see the movie. Maybe there's something specific. Because I feel like the similarity or how similar he looks to his
No, but that's part of the point, right? Like, you, in you have these guys who are lookalikes of people like Shah Rukh and Salman, who literally had their whole career is impersonating these guys at shows and corporate events and random things, right? So that is part of the storyline. Like, that whole the scene in the trailer or whatever, where it says, you know, sabse bada duniya ke sabse bada superstar ka sabse bada fan, and you see him walking up in Shah Rukh style, right? But it's not actually Shah Rukh, it's
got
the
it,
fan
yeah.
version. So, which is, I mean, it's just like, I see your point that it could be potentially a little bit narcissistic, but I like the, I think it's sufficiently different and fresh enough that I'm excited for it. So on that note, we will wrap up this episode because we're out of time. Thank you guys for being here.
Thanks, Pish.
Thanks for having us, Pish.
And Mansha and Shaz, both of you, but mostly Mansha. I will make sure you guys are back much sooner.
Mostly me, not Shaz. Shaz was more upset about not being called.
But Shaz has not communicated that to me. So you only get what you ask for.
Talking about subtleties, I was not talking about Shaz. I was not called back.
Out with the old and with the new.
Yeah. Shaz and I discuss this every time we meet, just letting you know.
Wow, that's eye-opening. Okay, thank you guys.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening. That was our show and hope you enjoyed it. You know what I'm about to say next, but I'm going to say it anyway. Please subscribe to Bollywood Weekly on iTunes using the podcast app or on SoundCloud, either on the web or using the app available on iOS and on Android. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. The links are in the description. And please do spread the word and let us know what you think in the comments. If there's anything you want to see us doing differently or anything you want to see more of, we will be happy to take all your feedback. And if you want to just share your views about what you think about these movies, we will be happy to feature those as well. See you next week.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.